This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Today is going to be more of a business-oriented type of episode, and it goes a little bit long, so I'll be fairly quick up front. But before we begin, I want to give a special announcement or attention, I guess, to a friend of the Magic Word, Jeff Pearson, who is undergoing treatment for pancreatic cancer. And he is someone, as I mentioned, who is not only a friend of the Magic Word, but has been a longtime personal friend of mine as well, from Carlsbad, California. And I just thought it was wonderful. He's a doctor, but had retired recently, stopped his practice, at least after he was diagnosed. And unfortunately, he's been going through all of this bad time. And so my thoughts and prayers are with him and his wife, Lori, and their friends and family and all of the rest of the caregivers. I mention this because he'd taken some time and money to send a donation in the midst of everything else going on in his life. And to think that someone would think enough to say, hey, just this means a lot of what you're doing with the podcast, and it means something to me so much that I want to help support this. So please don't misunderstand that I'm not soliciting donations, because, you know, you should trying to tug at your heartstrings. I'm just wanting to let you know of what a great guy he is, that there are so many things that go on in our lives from time to time that are life-threatening, such as this, and yet someone who is thinking outside of themselves and thinking of someone else like this. And it's just, I just want to point up what an altruistic spirit that he has and what a great guy. And thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate your thinking of me during this time when there are other things and people that you should be thinking of. But his wife had said that in a post on Facebook about how much that he has been enjoying the podcast during the past several days leading up to his critical surgery. And so it really means a lot to me that what I modestly do here or say and post these episodes, that it's helping someone else. So it means a lot to me that someone thinks this means a lot to them. Anyhow, I don't want to get much more sentimental, but I want to move on then to this week's episode with Anders Boulanger. Anders is from Canada, Winnipeg, I believe, and he is one of the younger magicians who's working on the trade show circuit now. He and I had met many years ago when I was performing up in Calgary, and then he was kind of just getting started, and he has just gone gangbusters, and he has taken the trade show business by storm. This week's episode, he is going to be talking a lot about what it's like, I guess, on the trade show circuit, which is a little bit different. Things are evolving from the days when we had some of the older guys of like Bud Dietrich and Dick Ryan, even up through Paul Gertner and now Seth Kramer. I mean, including Seth Kramer and so many other guys who have been doing that, and many who continue to do that. But this is an area that continues to thrive, and Anders Boulanger is one of the fellows who is leading the effort on doing shows, trade shows. And so he's going to give us the benefit of his knowledge and kind of how he does what he does, and some of the behind-the-scenes secrets of the trade show. So please welcome my guest this week, my friend and fellow trade show worker, Anders Boulanger, here on The Magic Word. Today we are in Las Vegas and speaking with a trade show magician who happens to be in Las Vegas then right now, kind of in between a couple of shows. He's from Canada but works wherever the job may take him, as most magicians would do, particularly trade show guys. It's kind of like wherever you need to be, just jump on the magic carpet and you'll be there. That's what I always say. Please welcome my friend Anders Boulanger. Hey there, Anders.
Hey, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
You bet. I'm so glad to have a chance to get to chat with you and talk a little bit about trade shows and everything else then as well. So do you get to Las Vegas very often, by the way? Is this one of the big trade show towns?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Las Vegas, San Francisco quite a bit, mm-hmm. Orlando. Those are probably my top three.
Okay.
our company works mostly with technology companies. So it's kind of, that's where the San Francisco Silicon Valley kind of thing
okay.
comes in. But, you know, Chicago is another big trade show town, of course, too.
Right.
And then there's some smaller trade shows, but that's typically where I end up going. And it always seems like 1 year, one is more popular than the other. So it's like, you know, you hit Orlando a ton or you hit, you know, Vegas.
Why would that be?
I don't know. Just kind of, they take turns, you know, some of the associations or the companies putting on these shows, they will just kind of like, they're going to alternate to create a little bit of variety. You know,
right.
for their attendees.
Okay.
And so sometimes they all just all alternate to one, it seems, but that's just how it is.
Right. Now, most trade show guys, we all specialize like in a particular area, if you will.
Right.
I mean, mine
we
is
met
energy.
At a trade show, actually. We met at the Global Petroleum Show in Calgary.
Is it Calgary or Toronto? It was Calgary.
Calgary.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Because my thing is working with the energy sector.
Yeah.
I feel comfortable with that. And so most of my clients are that. So are yours really more in the tech sector than specifically?
Yeah, probably like 95% of our clients are tech.
Mm-hmm.
We do have worked for, you know, agricultural companies, some more in the kind of industrial side of things like Siemens or something like that. But for the most part, you know, and I think this is, you know, wherever you're seen, you know, that's where a lot of your leads will come from. Like trade shows offer that
sure.
that perfect thing that all of the exhibitors are potential customers,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're watching you kill it at one booth. They might go, I want a guy like that or something
right.
like that. So they're always seeing that either work or not work and just making decisions based on that. So then you end up getting deeper and deeper into a certain vertical just because they see you and they want you and they go to these different shows. And so just like how, you know, you could be strong in the energy sector,
right.
you know, because those are the shows you're working. So
right.
that's that. And so technology, it does lend itself in a way that there's some pretty, you know, abstract, you know, you can't hold it in your hands. Like
right.
you go to, you know, the energy show, there'll be like safety valves or things that are on display.
You have
people
a physical
can,
thing
yeah,
that you can hold on to.
They can hang on to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're selling software or even an appliance, like a, you know, whether it is a router or it could be, you know, a firewall or some sort of a thing like that,
yeah.
you still can't see how it works, right?
Yeah.
That needs to be described. And that's where magic is, that great visual metaphor to help tell the story of how you solve that customer's problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the messaging that you build around into your presentation. So that's where I do like tech. And then the other side of it too is that, you know, software companies have huge profit margins because, well, they're selling software. There's no, you know, the cost of reproducing it is minimal.
Right.
So they have a lot of money to throw into marketing. So that's the other side of it is that I find that they have the bucks and it's kind of a nice place to hang out in that sense.
Right. Boy, a lot of stuff to unpack that you were just talking about right there. One of the important things is about how business begets business.
Yes.
And if you are in a show, you have to make friends with the booths around you. I'm sure that, you know, to go and talk with some of the booths to begin with and saying, I want to make sure that my sound level is not going to be too loud. If you have a problem, come let me know and that kind of a thing. And then I know some trade shows will have certain regulations that require you to not do some things or the sound. You can't use sound or different whatever. I mean, like I use a firewall. That's something that will attract attention. And I'd rather ask for forgiveness rather.
Yeah.
that
no,
case.
And you bring up great points, like making friends with your booth neighbors so they come to you and they don't complain to show management right off the bat.
Right.
You know, that's nice so that you don't get shut down. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those booth neighbors, they will get ticked because, you know, you have all the people coming to you and they get a little jealous, booth envy kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've had it where the, you know, back of my crowd is actually standing in the neighbor's booth, but
mm-hmm.
with their back
to that
neighbor.
Booth. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that I'm always trying to pull them in and, you know, squeeze in everybody, you know, and it's kind of like, that's rude, you know? So I'll say like, you know, get out of their booth or turn around and talk to them. You know what I mean? Like if you're
yeah.
standing in their booth, but those, as much as they kind of might hate you during the show, if for whatever, for those jealousy reasons,
mm-hmm.
they're usually the first that come by and go like, do you have a card? You know, like at
yeah.
the end of the show,
sure.
they're the ones that if you can't beat them, join them kind of happens.
Right.
And, yeah, so that's
and so
important.
Often, one of the nicest compliments that I get then from surrounding booths or when they come to me and saying, I've seen magicians before or whatever at booths, and also, or maybe I haven't, but I was expecting you to do magic, and you actually got a message that you're presenting. They've never seen a real trade show magician work doing the marketing about the company, because that gets to the bottom line of actually not trying to sell magic, but you're trying to sell the product, the company, the service, or whatever it is that they're trying to sell. You are their representative. The magic is just a vehicle. So for those who are interested in getting into trade shows, that's one of the key things I think that they have to learn and know it's not about them.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that, you know, the look at me, look what I can do kind of thing that we all as magicians tend to have.
Look how clever I am.
Right, right. And so I always look at, you know, the routines that I present as, you know, a way of taking them from problem to solution, right? The aha moment in the middle is maybe where the magic happens, but it's also the twist in which the company you're representing, their solution is introduced, or the key differentiator, the secret sauce, if you will, right? And that way, not only are people experiencing the magic and they're seeing this moment, you're kind of piquing their curiosity with it, but they're also having a peak experience, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, that makes that messaging memorable, right? Mm-hmm. That idea that we're, as magicians, we have this ability to, you know, create wonder in the moment, and to be able to insert that messaging at that moment is kind of a really special thing, right? Because you're making it so different. And what you said about, you know, putting that message first, that's where, you know, some magicians will say their name, you know, or they'll, you know, kind of they call me Anders because that's my name, you know, that thing. I never say my name. I never wear a name tag when I'm on stage. No one knows who I am.
Okay.
But I'm always just about the company, and I always come from it from this kind of like, look, I'm trying to save, like, I'm saying this in kind of quotes, like, save your life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you understand the frustrations of the people that are there, and when you state those frustrations and you see the nods of the heads, you understand, and you're like, okay, I'm hitting the right notes here in terms of being relevant to that people. And then when you talk about the solutions and how this comes, you're really taking them on a journey. And at the end, you know, for them to come up to you and say, like, do you work for the company?
I love that.
You know, right? Because they're confused, because you know this, your stuff so much.
Right.
That they have respect. They understand that you understand them and the problems in the industry. But then you exhibited a skill set that is so rare.
Right.
That how could you actually really work for the company, right? So that and I think that's when you know you're really nailing it, is when people come up and say that to you, because it's just, you know, that's a compliment, right?
It really is. The only thing that is better, I think, is whenever the president comes over and says, you know more than our salespeople do in this booth.
Yes. And that is a real pat on the back for sure.
Yeah.
Because
you become part of the sales team,
right,
and they respect you for that, because you are saying stuff that brings people into the booth, and I love that. It's like, you know, you're
especially if it's your first show, and you're like, how long have you been working with the company, or how long have you been known this, you know,
you look messaging at your watch,
exactly you know, it's been a week since I got the messaging back from you people.
Well, I'm working with them today. I could be with you tomorrow.
But
you have to be genuine, obviously, which I think gets to the bottom line of a lot of magic, as far as magic shows, where people are not genuine, nor do they have conviction when they are presenting something. So when you put something, transfer a coin from one hand to the other, you have to believe it actually is in that hand. Mm-hmm. So you have that conviction. The same thing, I think, as a salesman. I've been a salesman all of my life, and whether it's been magic or whatever, from the standpoint that people need to believe what you're trying to sell. So you have to be convinced that this is the best product. I've always been interested in advertising, because in advertising, you're trying to sell soap or whatever it is. And what makes this soap better than your competitor's soap? There are certain things, and you bring that out. And obviously, like with magic, that you are trying to disguise some things that are not its more, not its strengths, but it's their weaknesses. So you disguise the weaknesses, emphasize the strengths. Every company has that. And I think that's what you're trying to do. Well, that's what I try to do with the sales message, is to emphasize those strengths, those in the message, so that way people want to know more about this product, even though there may be someone else who's a competitor next door that might sell it cheaper or better, but mine is actually better.
Right. It's the positioning. And that piece that you said, like the first sale is to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you have to be sold on the product or the mm-hmm. service or whatever the company is selling. And I think of it as, you know, you are an ambassador for that brand. And you were, you know, waving the flag really hard or wearing the company T-shirt, if you will. You know, this idea that you're really, you know, you're all about the company. And even with some of the companies I work for, I will have their T-shirts. And when I'm not in my suit on the trade show floor, mm-hmm. if you see me at the convention, I'm wearing the company T-shirt, right? Like,
exactly.
So it's kind of like you're so convicted that you're, you know.
Yep. You're living as a company representative
yes.
all the time.
Yes.
As if that you are employed by them. I mean, exactly, yeah. that you should be on brand with their product. It's not like, well, I'm off the clock, I don't need to. Because when people see you in the bar or at the hospitality suite or wherever it might be, they say, oh, you're the magician with such and such a company. And you can't say, well, you know, just kind of...
Yeah, and you have to carry yourself in a professional way right. at all times in that sense, because every, you know, some of these shows, there's, you know, 30, 40,000 people staying in all the hotels around here.
Right.
You know, you're going to get recognized, right,
right,
on the show floor. So you might want to.
What's one of the first things or best things that would be a tip from you, Anders, that would be a way of tipping the crowd? I mean, as far as so the hard thing, like with close up magicians, whether you're in a hospitality suite or, you know, doing cocktail strolling or whatever, to walk up and say, hi, I'm the magician here, I want to entertain you. It's like, stay away. You know, mm-hmm. you're like the mariachi guy. You know, I don't want you to come over
right.
to my table or whatever. And some people try to avoid a booth if there's a magician or someone trying to talk to them and bring them into the booth. It's what is the thing that you do that attracts?
You know, I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can approach that.
Oh, yeah,
some people will start small, right? Uh-huh. Just with like, hey, you want to see a quick trick? That kind of thing.
One-on-one.
Yeah, one-on-one. And then you start kind of gradually increasing the energy. Maybe you turn your microphone on, you know, you start playing it bigger that way, right? And that's
mm-hmm.
kind of, that's the way that is kind of preserves your ego more. Do you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Like, because if it doesn't go anywhere, that's fine. We're just entertaining a few people, right?
Right.
And I find a lot of people like to do the smaller shows, just kind of like, you know, smaller groups, that sort of thing, and kind of go all day kind of
right.
ideas. So that's one style. I'll do that if I don't have the traffic to be able to do a bigger show. But I like to
yeah.
go for a bigger show and do, you know, a 20-minute, sometimes 25-minute presentation. And the longer you go, the bigger the crowd gets, because
yeah.
it's already big. So it looks like it has that, you know, social proof that there's something of value
yeah.
happening, right? So I tend to like swing for the fences and say, I'm going to create an event here in the booth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I carry an energy where I'm like, I know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to show you, right?
Yeah.
Like you're in the right place, you know, like, and then with that energy coming across, people, they sense that you have, and you have to have confidence, you know.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things too, that when you're first starting out, you're like, I'm going to try to do a show here. can you come here? Can you, you know, and you're coming from this weakness as opposed to, And this is one of the things I was trained by Joel Bauer that
mm-hmm.
I learned from Joel, was the, you know, the assertiveness in going down in your voice that conveys like, hey, we're going to do
confidence.
A show. You guys
are going
to want to stand here. Come on in here. You know, like
yeah.
you're like, this is happening with or without you.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, do you want to get in on the ground floor or not? You know,
yeah.
like that's
this
that's,
train is coming.
Yeah. And so that's what I like, you know, and that was one of the things that, you know, he taught me, is that shift. So that we're not coming from weakness, but we're coming from power.
Right.
And then people, when they sense that this is, like you say, the train is coming, you know, get on board kind
yeah.
of thing, then you can sweep them away with your energy. You know what I mean? Like you can, you suddenly, you're creating this event that they want to be a part of. And I even say to my crowds that I'm not doing a presentation for you. We're co-creating an event here.
Oh, I like
that. An experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not me doing it for you. It's us doing it for each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does that make sense, everybody? And they all nod their heads. And it's kind of like, that's my little way of, you know, if I got my first edge there, that's the buy-in moment where they're
yeah.
like, at that point, they're like, okay, man, what do you got for us? Like, give it to me. And then I can crank into content, you know what I mean? But I've been winning them over and building rapport at that point.
When you're, again, first starting off, let's say one-on-one like
yeah.
that and trying to tip the crowd.
Yeah.
Are you just doing a magic trick or do you talk about the company and the product?
I
or
tend
just do magic
not
only?
To talk about the product.
Just like, let me show you a cool thing.
Yeah. Like I have a stage that I get on and I'll always start on the floor You know, because you're building rapport, you build rapport on the floor, right. And so you're eye level with them and everything.
Right.
So I will always start off there, and that just people are comfortable with that. But then once I get up on the stage, then I get on page, is what I say. Yes. So that's when I get on script. So and just when I stand on that stage, that's when I kind of get that buy-in and the head nods. I'm like, we're ready to rock. Because
you flip on your microphone.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'll have my microphone on the whole time as soon as I start. But if you did like you want to kind of ease into it, that would be how some people, you know, start on the one-on-one. But sometimes, yeah, if someone's walked by, I'll sometimes say, hey, have you seen what I do, man? And he'll be like, no, what do you do? Ho, ho, ho. And then I turn on my microphone. And then I start because it's like, oh, I've got something for you, right?
So. I love it also when people will bring their friends back and say, hey, this guy just did something cool. Can you show my friend when you push a cigarette to a quarter or whatever? Yeah. It's like, well, but anyhow, that you kind of start into that pitch because you've already got a buy-in. And so it's easy to start a show. So my question is, have you ever worked with when you had a clock? And so
showtimes?
Yeah, showtimes.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Don't either. Okay. I tend to, if the company wants to do that, I usually try to talk them out of it. But and then sometimes they'll have presentations in the booth.
Correct.
And they want you to build a crowd
before
for the presentation.
Correct.
And so then you're on the clock. That way you're going to get
what
you get. In my whole, trade show experience, I've never seen, people come by to watch a presentation because of it announced on Twitter or because of the sign that's by the booth. I was like, whoever's going to be in the crowd is whoever was walking by at the time when it was happening, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the reality of the situation. So, so advertising times to me, it's just kind of almost can really tie you up or tie you down in the sense that, they schedule one for 12:30. Well, it's lunch. No one's gonna, is the
right.
The traffic is low right now. I'd rather, I used to hang out with a lot of street performers, and they would. There was one guy, his name was Alkazam, Al, they call him. He had a calculation for the temperature. Like he did a lot of street performing.
I guess so.
The temperature and the number of people who would walk by in a minute. And when it hit his certain numbers, he's like, oh yeah. He's like, mate, it's going to be good. Like he would know that he could do a really big show.
Wow.
I feel like you can, sense the energy in the room by the loudness and the traffic and different things. And sometimes you just feel it surge up and you're like, oh, and then suddenly you do see some more people like, okay, I'm going to go,
Well, like that's because there are presentations going on throughout the day. And sometimes the groups are in listening to a speaker.
Concurrent sessions let out or keynotes let out. Yeah. People coming back from lunch.
So you have
or
these waves that kind of come through. And then sometimes there's nothing you can do to get a crowd. And so if you have the time starting, let's say at 2:30, and that's when a keynote speaker is going to, it's like, there's nobody here,
So here's a tip for people who do trade shows. Sometimes the companies don't want to do the last day.
And that's true.
They'll say, no.
It's just going to be.
And so what I always tell my clients, I'm like, oh, that's interesting you say that. Because you know what? How many other companies do you think are probably saying the same thing? She's like, well, probably all of them. It's like, yeah. So what if you tried the last day and everyone else let off the gas, but you put yours down to the floor? They go, oh. And I actually find the last day the most fun for me because
really?
No one else is trying. So it's the traffic could be lighter, but the people who watch, it becomes so much more immersive for them, because it's like, I'll even say, turn on my mic, people walking by, like, you notice there's not a lot going on today, right? Let's change that, And then so they're like, whoa, what's going on, right? So I like that. And that's how I talk them into the last day is just the fact that that same mentality is common among all the exhibitors. So let's be different, let's differentiate your company and swing for the fences every single time.
I just talked with someone recently and was asking about what their magic word was. And they were saying, whatever everyone else is doing, do the opposite. And so that's kind of exactly what you're saying right there. When you see the audience and the rest of the booths are starting to pack up and putting stuff in boxes. But there are still people in traffic that's coming by. That's the time to maybe kind of ramp up because you have still some people who are, wanting to hear the message, that's going on.
Yeah.
So I hadn't thought about that on the last day. That's true. Because typically they say, well, we're going to do nothing running the last day. So we just need you for the first 2 days, third day you're off, kind of a thing. But wow, that's a good tip there then too. When you are presenting, or I should say preparing this, we'll get into getting the clients here later, but as far as the let's talk about that. As far as getting the clients, we talked first of all earlier about how that when you're at a show, the best way to get more shows is to make friends with those around you, because again, those who are going to be coming up to you, and make sure you hand out your cards. I mean, you're not necessarily going around trying to solicit, although that is another idea that you can do, but how would you go about getting into the trade show business?
Yeah, I think that's probably the hardest part is getting started, right? There's always lots of people like, oh, I want to do trade show. You know, how do you, but getting, once you get seen at a trade show, then you can start getting that spinoff work, right? That we discussed. Mm-hmm. Again, I was trained by Joel Bauer, and his advice was crashing shows. And so my first promo video was all from crashed presentations. So I flew myself to Toronto. I live in Winnipeg, Canada.
I saw
Canada.
The video when he was talking to Magic Live, and you were there, and he was showing a video. Yeah. What was the other gentleman's name?
Shikuma, I think, probably. Yeah, because he filmed Shikuma. I just had lunch with him before we came here. So, yeah.
Because he was talking about the bills. You know, here's $100 bills or whatever.
Yeah. So I the first trade show, I went. I got myself a badge. I think it was free to attend, but I had to pay money to fly there. Mm-hmm. And then I went booth to booth seeing if they wanted a demo, a sample. And then if they agreed to it, the thing was, well, you have to record it for me, you know? So then and basically it was looking at the booth's messaging and working that into my presentation, you know, almost on the fly you know? And that's how I started getting my video and getting things going, and then got my website. And, you know, so there was a little bit of kind of build it before you're even ready.
Yeah.
Right, because you're getting around this idea, getting around having real promo from you working real clients. You're getting these crowd shots and these different things, right? That kind of thing. So that is the hardest part about trade shows, I think, is getting people to understand what it is and how you can do it, and that you're available. But a big thing that I think magicians, We're not business people enough, you know, maybe more artistic or more, come from that background. And until you kind of shift your thinking into talking business, you know, it's not about the tricks you're going to do, you know, and like the companies.
It's about their ROI.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's going to be about the lead generation and then what that can do for the company, right? Because the people hiring you are, you know, their job is to make sure the booth's busy, get the message across, and everything else they don't really care. Like, they might care about the details because those event managers are detail-oriented. They've got a lot of details to manage. But really, what tricks you're going to do, and I've seen people start going, oh, I'll do this trick and I'll weave this in. And they don't care.
They don't care.
No. Just, you know, you do your job and support them in making them look good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's how you keep your clients, right? Once you get them, you know? So I don't have a ton of advice for getting started, because it's kind of like I did crash, got the video, and then my first client that came off of my website that with that crash video and all that stuff, I was working for them last week.
You're still working with
them?
So
I'm still working with them.
That's great.
And so, and I can go back, and we were just talking about Shikuma. He was the first guy I hired when I was already booked, because I knew he was also trained by Joel. We speak the same language. We're good friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was the first guy I hired as kind of like subcontracted. Right.
Yeah.
And so that was the thing, is now any leads coming to him are going to come back to me.
Right.
So now I've kind of basically leveraged my exposure at a trade show. And, you know, you get busier and busier. And whether I'm going to work that show or I have someone else work that show or Shikuma works it, you know, but that's kind of how my business built out. But I can trace it back to the company I worked for was called Veeam. And, you know, I can go, oh, I remember so-and-so saw me at that booth. That's when Shikuma got that gig. Mm-hmm. Someone saw Shikuma, you know, and that's when we got this client. And it's just started kind of ballooning out from there.
Yeah.
So what's the thing? The best advice is have a good show, right?
Right.
Like, you know, to get business. And
to begin with, you have to have the ability rather than trying to learn that on the fly.
Yeah.
But what you had said then also, Anders, goes back to something that I learned from Paul Diamond way back when, which he had a set of lecture notes, you remember? Mm-hmm. It's called It Takes Guts, Damn It.
That's where Joel got it from, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I've used that. And the whole idea of that, too, for those who are not familiar with it, basically, as you said, you go to a show, you look at what is the product, and you start building a crowd. And then after 15 minutes or a half hour, after different crowds have come through and people are coming through, you can turn around to the business and say, would you like for me to continue?
Yeah.
And if so, it's going to cost you X dollars. If not, I'm moving on down to the row, you know, and you could make money like right there or make at least some contacts that you can come back to then as well. However, one time I tried that and it backfired on me from the standpoint that I got an email from the show person who was the contractor to put the whole thing together or whatever, and said, I didn't see your name on the list of attendees. How did you get in? And because I was handing out my card to different people, and not that they were complaining. I mean, I wasn't performing. I was just kind of saying, here's what I do, and here's how I can help you, or whatever. This lady was saying, well, you owe us X dollars for coming into the show without having paid and crashing the show, kind of a thing. So it's like I didn't follow up on that email, but I kind of got spanked, you know, for trying to do that. But then once you get the show, to me, the biggest challenge and the most fun of all of Magic for all of this is to be creative and coming up with a presentation that's going to fit for my client. Mm-hmm. I think that's my forte. I really love doing that kind of a thing because we all know enough tricks. We have enough magic in our closets and drawers and everything. But now it's a matter of pulling that out and trying to make that fit for the company. And so my tip, actually, in learning more about the company is to memorize the splash page on their website, mm-hmm. because that is what they want people who come to the website to learn and to know about the company. And so if I memorize all of those high points, basically, certainly you can click and go to another web page and tells you more about this tool or this pump or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the main page is the main stuff. And if I can memorize all of that stuff and then figure out something that is going to be a few tricks to emphasize the points of each of these things, and it doesn't have to be Professor's Nightmare or the Linking Rings or anything. I mean, or it doesn't have to even be a card trick. There are so many different things that I've done and I've used. Again, just kind of using your imagination. That is where, again, the president will come back and say to me, you know more about our company. That's because, well, I know from a high level, and you're talking at a certain level to the clients about things that they want them to know, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And so we start off with, at our company, we call it a message engineering questionnaire. So an MEQ, and that gets filled out by a product marketing manager of some sort. And then we have a follow-up like Zoom call, mm-hmm. where we can kind of dig into it a little bit. Because sometimes, I mean, they like to throw a lot of stuff in there, and it's like you kind of sometimes go, okay, no, come on, really, what does this mean? You know, like the marketing, mumbo jumbo that sometimes they throw at you is kind of like these mission statement big, you know, words where it doesn't really, you want to make it so that my challenge is I want to understand it so that I can then teach it, right?
Right.
And so I often will ask for more information than it's ever going to get into the presentation, but I want to understand it at the level, and this is technology too, the idea that we're going a level below what I need to speak to it at. Mm-hmm. And so if I can understand it on those two levels, you know, that lower level, I can support that higher level at which I'm going to actually say it at. So I want to have, I don't want to be able to just like say this line.
Yeah.
I want to be able to believe this line, right? Like I want to be able to like
have the conviction.
I want the messaging to have a backbone, right? Mm-hmm. And so that when, you know, again, when you get people coming up and like, you really know your stuff, right? Like that's what I want. And that's the danger too, when we talk about messaging and magicians and magicians who haven't done many trade shows is that they will often come into it and it gets very hokey or it gets cheesy very quickly.
Very quick.
Because they're trying to do a magic trick and then just shoehorn in
some messaging. Right. Yeah.
And what you were talking about, Scott, was that you're kind of building the routine from the ground up, looking at how can I represent this idea or this benefit.
Exactly.
And make that strong, mm-hmm. right? That being said, it's amazing what you can do with a routine you know really well.
Oh, sure.
You know, and because if you get creative and how you speak
I'm not
about
saying
it.
Not to use Professor Zeitmer and Lincoln Rings, of course. But in the routines that you do that could be part of your repertoire, but if people are at similar shows and they're now seeing you work for Company A one time and Company B another time, and you're selling their product but using the same tricks, I'd rather not do that, you know?
Yeah, I'm guilty of that, though.
Are
I
you?
Will say,
okay.
Yeah, because one of the things, and here's my criteria for, like, I want my material to be message friendly, meaning I can plug in all kinds of different things mm-hmm. into it, right? So it's not too restricting, you know. I used to do kind of more one-off stuff.
Yeah.
But then I also want something that can be seen up high, you know what I mean? Something that people can help me hold, or there's different, you know, maybe it's gamified, has a perceived risk to it. Like, there's like kind of certain criteria that I like. And when I find something that is strong like that, then mm-hmm. I realize, oh, this, I can almost plug and play with everything, right? So I'm a little bit guilty of using similar material for different companies.
Okay.
But the other side of it is I have a system. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, once you find something that really works well.
Okay.
And again, you do have to do material that you can do, like, with your eyes closed or in your sleep, pretty much. Like, I do recommend that. Just because
you're thinking about the message, not the trick.
You're thinking about the and it's like you're splitting your brain in half, and all of your conscious awareness is for the messaging and being present in the moment with those people, while your hands are on autopilot, you know, and do all the other stuff.
Right.
Because if you go in there so worried about that script, you know, or the words you're trying to say, you're not going to have the confidence that you need to keep that crowd, because mm-hmm. people vote with their feet. They're either coming closer to you and staying, or they're leaving.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, your crowd can leave on you, you know, and you're like, whoa, you know, like that's the opposite of what you promised the company.
That's why you want to have a good hook to have them stick around until the end of whatever presentation that you have to deliver.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely on the material side of things, I do recommend doing something that you really know well, so that you can concentrate on the messaging. And also, with as far as the messaging, I personally don't. I will script it. I will write out a whole script, and then do I hit that script all the time? I don't know. Maybe I'm 85% mm-hmm. of the time I'm on it, but not. You know what I mean?
Like, sure. No.
But mm-hmm. I like to learn stuff so well that I could make it up as I go, because I understand the company.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Where some people, if they don't say the exact same words, they can't tell what the next word is. Do you know what I mean?
I know
in
what
that
you mean.
Memorization?
Yep.
And some trade show presenters will use an ear prompter, meaning that they've recorded the script and it plays in their ear, and they are just saying the words a beat or two behind themselves, hearing themselves say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that tied into that technology or that kind of thing. I am much more of a stream of consciousness kind of presenter, you know, and I understand it.
Yeah.
And I'll present it, but every show might be a little different. And but it's good because it's more in the moment for people too, in that sense.
Right. Well, I think that your audience, whether you're doing magic or whether you're doing a trade show, realize the reality, the real person that comes through. And if you're trying to be fake about it, I think that shows also. So if you're not convinced as to what you're trying to sell in the product, that will come across. And like you say, they vote with their feet. They're going to walk away. It's kind of like, I'm not interested in what this guy is saying.
And that's where when you write your script, you know, that you do it in language that you are comfortable in saying.
That's true.
Because, you know, and again, that's that being a bit of a filter.
Even though there's shop talk and there are words.
Yeah, there's going to be shop talk. But you still have to be able to kind of, you know, if you read something, you're like, I would never say that. Then I would advise you to change it into something you would say.
Yeah.
Because that just is going to make it more accessible to people. And even people who are in the industry and understand the jargon.
Mm-hmm.
When I can, I try to get around it, or I'll at least state the acronym, and you know, state the whole acronym before using the acronym. Because one time I was working at the RSA conference, which is like a cybersecurity event, and I had a woman come up to me, and she said, "I've been to all the presentations here, and yours was the only one I could understand."
Interesting.
And I was like, huh. And then I learned a little bit more that she was a spouse of one of the attendees. So she wasn't in the industry.
Yeah,
she's and so she wasn't a qualified lead, let's say.
Right.
But it was interesting that the lowest common denominator could understand what I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's important, that we don't lose anyone and overwhelm people, right? That we simply use our ability to be that filter to simplify, you know, what that messaging's about. And I feel that that resonates with people so much more strongly when you do bring it down to that, you know, brass tacks kind of benefits.
My good buddy, Charles Green III, specializes like in the pharmaceutical business, which to me, I can't pronounce half the words, you know, that are drugs or, you know, the instruments that doctors would use or whatever. That is, again, another specialty kind of a thing that you've got to learn certain things.
Right.
And to try to talk on a layman's level, it's difficult because the people who are attending those conferences are not laymen. They are doctors. They are people who use these pharmaceuticals all the time. And so you've got to say that. And so
it's a bit of a dance, I would say, because you do want to speak to who the audience is.
Correct. The qualified leads, as you said.
Right. But at the same time, we can sometimes, and technology is really bad for this, where at one point, I have a thing where I'll sometimes make a joke, and it won't make any sense, but I'll explain it here.
Okay.
I'll explain the joke. But I'm working for the company, and I have this picture of a frustrated man, and I say, well, he's frustrated because he's not meeting his RPOs and his RTOs, so he's not meeting his SLAs. WTF am I talking about, right? Like, and it's the idea that recovery point objectives and recovery time objectives are something in backups for data protection.
Okay.
And SLAs are service level agreements.
Okay.
So they need to maintain a certain level of uptime for their clients is kind of the idea. But a lot of the companies aren't doing it. But I'm making fun of the three-letter acronyms because it is insane.
WTF, yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, and but they all kind of like, yeah, you're right. You know, like that's – so I'm kind of – I kind of call it out a little bit. But at the same time, then I'm going to talk about, you know, hey, you don't want downtime, right? No, you know, like – and I'm not always talking about these RPOs and RTOs, right?
Yeah.
So – It's sometimes how do we kind of show the mirror on ourselves, because every industry is going to have their techno babble.
Yep.
And it gets out of hand to the point where things stop having meaning for us. We understand, but it's not we're not connected. Like I make a conscious effort to have kinesthetic, audible, like or you know audio words sounding.
Yeah,
and visual terms in my presentations. So you know, I'll say, can you guys see a world that would look like blah 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 blah? You know, what would it be like if your boss said this to you, right? And so that's the audio part. And then like, how good would it feel if you had this monkey off your back of this happening, right? And so talking about it in the terms of how we experience the world actually is putting us in. Like it's almost like a hypnotic language pattern kind of idea. People are, we're painting a better picture for them. There's a visual one for you again, right? And so when people get immersed in and engaged in a presentation, you are putting them into that space. So the more you can hit those three senses, like of course we have five senses, but talking about taste and smell doesn't fit in our normal work. But I find that brings people more into the presentation, and they're more, like I said, immersed. So that's just what I like to do. But I really like geek out on this stuff. Like, how do I get people to be into the presentation more? How can I get more people to come to the crowd? How can I provide more value for the client? And so I'm always looking at ways of you know, just trying to make it a better show so that they – That you have more value, you know, you charge more.
And that's kind of the bottom line. You want to bring more to your client so that way that you can prove your value of what you are charging and be able to come back and do the show then again.
Yeah, yeah. And you keep those clients happy and have them want to go, well, I wouldn't want to do a show without them, right? Like, right. That's what you, that's where you want to get them.
It's exactly right. Yeah. Where they're going to say, let's book this again then for next year.
Yeah.
Or in many cases, you can have a bulk kind of a deal saying, here is my fee for this show, or if I get four shows this year with you, it'll be this, or six, or whatever it is, and it's international travel or whatever. When you are booking shows, do you, without getting into detail as to charging, but do you have the an all-in price that includes your transportation and lodging and everything, or do you have a or a per diem or like a fee and then
we charge a daily fee and then for whatever however many trade show days and yeah. then travel on top and then a per diem on top.
Okay,
so that's the way I do it. I mean, some people kind of try to make it a little easier, but it's some shows are in Europe, some shows are, you know what I mean?
Right.
You could quote differently, but typically that's kind of how we operate. Like, hey, you got to get there. You got to get me there. And
right.
this is our fee. And then the per diem, we charge a pretty healthy per diem because it's kind of like, if it's my guys that I'm booking out, mm-hmm. then, I want them to be looked after and not have to think about, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
give them enough that they don't have
they
to
go
think
have
about
steak
it
dinner if they want
and
to
you
wear.
Look after mm-hmm. them. And if you're in a better headspace to, concentrate on what you're doing, then I'm
right.
all for that. Right. Like
a while back I had a show in which was going to be in Abu Dhabi, and it was a similar kind of a thing in which I was trying to price this actually all in one. And then I said, okay, I'm just going to split this out. So it's going to be, this is how much it is per day. And here's what the travel is, because they weren't making a decision to do this pretty quickly. I mean, they wanted me, but the fee on the airfare kept going up and up. And it's like each week, it seems like
right.
you got closer to the show. It's like, well, it's now going to be, $1,500. Well, now it's $1,750. I'm just charging you whatever
right.
I can. Or I could just leave it with you. So I've kind of since then decided, okay, I'm going to let you be responsible for my airfare.
Yeah.
And let them arrange, because a lot of companies have their own internal
travel
agency,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And so that way they can yeah. arrange for it and then pay you.
When you're first starting out, it can be tricky because you might not be charging much. And when the
yeah.
travel is more than your fee, that can have a, that may be a time you want to build it all in. But,
I learned that in corporate work as well. Mm-hmm. I was doing a show in Detroit, and they paid more for my flight. Not just lodging, but I mean, flight and lodging, but my flight was more than what I was charging for my fee. And I thought, this is not going to ever happen again.
Yeah. Good notice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then as far as the contracts go, that you have a set form that you send out?
Yeah. I mean, I have certain terms and everything that, that are built in there. Of course, post-pandemic, now there's certain, things that they want in there in terms of if the show gets canceled, that's mm-hmm. that's the protection they're looking for. It's not that they're going to pull out themselves, but if the show gets canceled, then they want out of the contract is kind of what.
What about what force majeure? I mean, this is a different day and age that we're in now than it was, during COVID. So now that we're past that, so what is it?
How
has it changed?
Yeah, I never even had a force majeure in there unless they decided to have it,
mm-hmm.
So it depends on the company and how stringent their legal department is on, these terms and conditions. So mine is now, you can't, once you commit, but if the show is canceled itself, we'll either book it for another, if there was a deposit already, we'll book another time or
right.
you get your money back, and that sort of thing. So, but as far as the companies too, some of them will have different requirements, and I end up keeping like almost templates or just old contracts for certain companies because you're like the lawyers can just slaughter your contracts, right? And need
right.
all the kinds of things. So it's like, okay, this is for this company, this is for this company, this is for this company. And it's just nice to be able to get them to sign it fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like just like, boom, we're done, move on. And as far as multi-show contracts, I've never had too many companies do that. I've had a few, but I find nowadays that the time when they are going to book and have a show, it's shortened a little bit.
What do you mean?
Like in terms of, let's say 3 months out, they're booking as opposed to 6 months or 12 months out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the show and when you get booked, there's a shorter time window between being booked and the show taking place.
Okay.
And so I'm finding there's a lot more of this kind of like just one-offs, one at a time, you know, doing the shows. And the, like I said, the companies I've been working for a long time, mm-hmm. they still come back, but it's kind of like they want to plan the show when they're ready to plan the show.
Correct.
As opposed to, you know, the...
that's the majority.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just so the multi-show contracts are always nice, but it's not always...
There are not that many companies that are large enough that have their own marketing department for trade shows that would be booking you in advance for all those kinds of things, saying, yeah, we're planning on being in Denver and San Francisco and mm-hmm. Toronto and New York this year, and we'd like for you to be in all four of those. It's like, or whatever.
It is nice when I usually talk about it being a wish list. So if, you know, once a company, you know, buys into you, and I just had a new client, you know, a couple of weeks ago. This was the POC, and in tech, that's proof of concept. You know, so that's a common term for them, where someone would install software or some solution and try it out first, right? So we would do one show as the proof of concept, and once they love it, they're like, "All right, send me your wish list." You know, like let me get some shows on the calendar, right? And that's a way of kind of starting that kind of multi-show conversation. Is, you know, once you've been successful, you know, why wouldn't you want this at all your shows?
Why wouldn't you? Exactly right. Well, similarly, like when we had met in Calgary, I had worked for this show for this company in Houston. And getting into it was kind of funny because there was a gentleman who saw me perform someplace, and he was trying to convince the and he was a consultant, actually. He was trying to convince the company he was consulting for to use me in their show. And the people with the company had no idea how to use a magician, never used a magician. And I went into the boardroom, and this gentleman wasn't there, but he was actually on like a Skype call, like on the TV screen in the room. So, you know, arms were crossed. It's kind of like, well, magic boy, what are you doing here?
What do you got for us?
Yeah, so this guy was trying to explain what I do. I said, well, let me show you. And so I did a few things for them, and I had already worked up a presentation incorporating their company and everything. And before long, I had them smiling and laughing, and I just pushed the contract across the table to them and say, you know, just sign right there. And said, okay, great. And we did. We finalized the contract. But the point is that after we did that in Houston, then they could only make a suggestion to this group in Calgary that they use me. Said, this guy is really great. This is who you should be using. It's who we're using.
Because it was
now.
The Canadian office. Is that
correct?
Why?
The Canadian office was the one in charge of their trade show. Right. They could only make recommendations, even though they were the home office, but they were not in charge of how they would do their thing. So they convinced them at least to say, I'll tell you what, we will proof a concept again. We will have this guy, we'll have Scott do something on the second day. We will do our first day the way we normally do, and we'll kind of look to see how many people come into the booth and how many clients or how much foot traffic we get in. And then the second day we'll have him. And after the first 1 hour, they had told me, and they called my boss back in Houston, of saying, we have already exceeded all of yesterday's traffic in the first hour of what you have brought in.
Now they'd be kicking themselves that they didn't use you
the first day,
right?
Right. Yeah. But they were convinced, oh, we don't really need this guy. Yeah. And again, they didn't understand how this worked and everything. So there are a lot of companies. It's a hurdle to try to get over.
Well, and that, you bring up a great point, and I have this conversation with people quite a bit, actually, is that if they watched you in your presentation, they get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But if you tried to explain that on the phone or even in a Zoom call with PowerPoint and you're sharing screens or even watching a video, it doesn't quite do it justice.
Correct.
Right? Because they're actually experiencing it. They're in the crowd. They're feeling what their attendees would feel. And it's a completely different, you know, scenario. And so that is, again, another hurdle is like, how do you, you know, get... And so when we talk about proof of concept, if that's what it takes, don't pay me anything until you see it, you know, this kind of idea. And then they get the buy-in and then you're good to go.
Right.
Because it is different. Like, you know, if you try to start talking about, again, going into the tricks or going into the things, it's the idea that it is I call it a high passion message driven presentation. When I talk about it, I don't really say much about magic.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I'm going to be doing, you know, demonstrations that are intrinsically interesting and will have your company message tied into it.
Right.
You know, and people are like, oh, what's that? Like, you know, even just talking about that sounds interesting.
It does, because it's something that hits what they're interested in and what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about their business. They don't, it's kind of like, whenever you're introduced as a magician, people don't know where to carry that conversation.
Yeah.
They just have the usual common things. Oh, can you make my wife disappear? Or, you know, yeah. I bet my kids would love
right.
that or
the whatever. Standard jokes and,
right.
and whatever. And I work with what we call engagement specialists, which are our professional booth staff that help scan the badges. And,
yeah.
And so you've probably worked some shows where you put a crowd of people there and the booth staff are off goofing off or watching the show too, right? No one's scanning badges.
Right.
So that's why we use them. And, you know, in that, you know, having them there and employing, and sometimes they'll be adding to the crowd, like talking people into watching me, mm-hmm. right? So I'm already started. I will often say, you know, they go, hey, have you seen the magician? I'm like, don't say that. Because then people make a snap judgment about what a magician
yeah.
is about.
Oh,
they
my
have
kids
the
aren't here. Yeah, yeah.
connotations and associations with it. I'll always say, you know, have you seen this guy? Oh, you got to check him out. And that leaves it a little bit ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they do watch, and then we can have that ability to sweep them away and take them on that journey,
right?
You know, but again, sometimes just leading with magic is not the best.
It's kind
way.
Of like, not to change the subject, you and I were talking about In and of Itself with Derek
yeah.
Delgadio.
Yeah.
You were one of the fortunate people who got to see that show live. And as I heard Derek talking at Magic Live here recently about how people would bring their kids thinking, oh, we're going to see a magic show.
Yeah.
And then when they get there, it's kind of like, ooh, this is...
Yeah.
This is art and abstract. This is theater.
Right. And there's some darkness to that show,
there is
too,
some darkness.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, that's not necessarily family-friendly
right.
kind of a show for
yeah.
certain little kids. I mean,
yeah.
this is not Balloon Animals and, you know.
And, you know, now this, I'm jumping off on that point,
yeah.
is that in a trade show, I've done this where I'll see some kids. I'm like, oh, yeah, the kids love magic. But if you start doing magic for the kids,
yeah.
all of a sudden now you're the kid magician at the trade show. Like, if people are walking by,
yeah.
they're, oh, he's entertaining the kids. That's nice.
They're so not going to stop.
I've fallen into that trap, and I was like, oh, you suddenly just get painted with this broad brush
of being a birthday party.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like, if there's kids, I will use them, but I'm not going to play down to them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
oh, let me show you a trick, you know, or something like that.
Right.
I'm going to do my normal show, and they get to have a little piece of a role in that, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's for the adults. Right. And I'm not
right.
saying, and there's adult material.
No,
I'm
know
just
what saying
that. I'm playing to the leads or the prospects of the company,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and then this happened a couple of weeks ago. This kid had no idea what I was talking about because I'm talking about cybersecurity, you know. And I'm like, don't worry, just watch the magic, you know, like just go with it. But that's how, because I didn't want to make it relevant to the audience.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's true. Sometimes when you're doing some of these, maybe a home show or something, and some people or some prospects are bringing their kids in for whatever reason, that you, I haven't seen that happen a lot. But when as far as coming to my booth of saying, hey, let's go watch a magician, that's a problem. Like at shopping malls, when I first got started, I was working in shopping malls, and the parents just had me as the babysitter. They said, there's a magician over there, and
I'm going to go try on some shoes.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah,
we'll
yeah.
be back in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so
right.
we're going to leave you with the magician.
Yeah.
And so I would hate for that to happen, like in a trade show where someone is saying, oh, well, I'm comfortable leaving mm-hmm. my child here for just a minute. I'm going to be at the booth behind you over here
yeah.
or something.
Well, and there is a difference between public shows and trade shows in terms of audience attitudes or what have you, right? So
investment.
If you're talking mm-hmm. like a home show or a boat show or whatever
right. Right.
kind
Car
of show,
show. Mm-hmm.
Renovation show, you know, so you got people have bought tickets coming in and they're wandering around and they're
right.
just kind of, I mean, they're consumers, right? Just
they're mom and pop
the
people. They're regular off the
yeah.
street. Exactly.
Yeah. So that I
it's
find.
It's not an executive crowd
right.
of business
and,
people.
And then when you go to a show where it's like trade show or like an association or is putting it on or a, you know, a company's putting it on and they're all of their partners or whatever's being the attendees, I find that a completely different vibe and feeling, where if it's business, there is a little bit more of a sense of urgency, a sense of importance, and it's not, you know, so at a home show or something like that, that can be a lot lighter. That can be a lot more, you know, you're not going to kill people with the messaging as hard, too.
That's true.
Right?
If you're trying to sell guttering or something for a company, for an example.
So finding your right, you know, messaging density, you know, for the appropriate thing. And they'll tell you, too. Again, they vote with your feet. You know what I mean? Like, the feedback is so apparent, right? Just like a street performer. Right. You're getting nobody's stop. You got to change something up. You got to try a different approach, you know? And if people are leaving, is your show too long? You know, is it, or is it too, or is it not engaging enough to hold them? Right. Yeah. And so you keep tweaking things and you keep figuring out what works. Like, I'll even be doing things, you know, in the show where I'll say some line and I see someone walking by and I see if that person will stop just by what I've said. And then, and if they do, it's that little pat on the back. They go, have to try that again and test it, right? So
that's right.
How you kind of tailor to the audience and what's there. And sometimes I have to dial myself up or dial myself down depending on that crowd. Like the show 2 weeks ago and then the show last week, the audiences were still tech, but they were a different type of tech. And so I had to adjust myself accordingly. And
interesting.
Yeah. So
it's just, there is a lot of similarity between trade shows and being a street performer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Did you street perform ever?
I have once or twice.
Okay.
And it's tough. I just don't like being out in the heat, and it's fun. It's okay. But I don't mind attracting traffic. I've had some other trade show magicians who have told me, said, I like the way you to attract traffic. It's just, it's been natural for me. I mean, I've never had a problem trying to get the crowd or to introduce myself. Like the hardest thing, kind of getting off topic here a little bit, but when you approach a group, the hardest thing is not approaching a group, but it's leaving a group. If you think about it, because once you have got people on your side and they're buying what you're selling, whether it's at a trade show, whether it's the street performing, whether you're doing cocktail parties at a restaurant and walking up or whatever, it's hard to stop, particularly like in a cocktail party, because you're supposed to be strolling around. But once you have people that are laughing, they're really into that, you have to stop that and then go and create
start
that whole
fresh
thing again. Yeah. That same experience for another group of three or four or six different people over there. And so it's harder to stop than it is to start, I think. So if you stop and think about trying to start a conversation and start magic, you can do it. And once you get them after the first one, first trick or first joke or whatever, then you've got them in your hand and then they love you. But it's hard to say goodbye to someone you love.
Yeah, and I think too, like, I feel that in trade shows and street performing, you're every time you start, you always start with nothing.
Correct.
And that's nothing. That's the, you know, the presenters that sometimes, you know, I'm building crowds for, you know, they're thrilled because, wow, they have someone to talk to right off the bat. And in the other booths, they got to start a presentation talking to nobody, right?
Like, right.
And so, you know, that's really what is special about us, you know, as magicians or trade show magicians, is that we can create something from nothing.
Yeah.
Right. And to create that crowd. But it is a little frustrating, like, oh, here we go again. You know what I mean? Like, we're starting with nothing. But
once you get them, my point is you're rolling. Now, of course, you have a script and you're finished with the script and you can go.
Yeah.
And you've got certain time because you want to say, you don't want to take too much time because you want to have them cross over into the booth.
You need the turnover and you need them to hand them over to the, you know, like, and my job too is like at the end of my presentation, there's a moment, and I was just talking to Shakuma about this too, that there's a moment where everyone who's bought, like who's watching is so bought in that they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like you've struggled or worked hard through the whole presentation and then you're at this point and everyone's just like, they're listening.
What do I do now?
And now you can say anything you want about the company. You can do, you know, you can make a big case for it. And I usually have a call to action that I write in my scripts and it'll be like, you know, if we can help you X and if we can help your company Y and Z, how many people would be willing to take like a 2 minute demo? Raise your hand. And I make a little, you can see it, but I scrunch up my face like 2 minutes, that's nothing on my face because I noticed that more people would put their hands up when I made that face. This is one of those little things that the feedback teaches you. And when I say 2-minute demo, I know if the person's interested, that demo will stretch out. But 2 minutes, everyone, they've already spent 20 minutes with me. What's another two?
What's another two minutes?
Yeah, whatever. Right. So the hands will go up. And then I'll say, hey, if you guys do that, come in. You see Jim over there? You know, meet me over there where Jim is. If you guys do that, then I've done my job. Fair enough? And now I've given them this whole experience. I've obligated them in a sense that I've invoked the law of reciprocity. I've given them something and they haven't had to give anything back.
Right.
Well, they gave their time.
That's
but
right.
In that sense, I think about it like, how do I take my presentation and create greater demo conversion? So now I'll lead these guys over to the demo, and now the demo guys loves it. The whole company's thrilled that not only did I draw a crowd, talk about the company and the messaging and the benefits, but then I've actually upsold their time and attention to taking the next step in the customer buying journey. So,
because I don't want them asking me more questions about that, because I hate to say I pretty much shot my wad. I don't know anything more about the company. You need to talk to Jim over there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's excellent of actually leading them, and you're passing them off as you stand out of the way. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you anymore. He'll tell you more.
And you edify that subject matter expert, right? Like, this is the guy you want to talk to, right? You know, this is and you're in good hands. I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know sometimes the companies will say, well, we have these presentations and can you give the presentation? And it's like, well, that's not my expertise, but it's going to cost a little bit more. If you want me to actually spend 15 minutes and talk at length with the PowerPoint presentation, I can, which there's no magic. It's just basically you're kind of reading from the script they give you. But it's better if they do something themselves that, as you said earlier about how you would introduce, about saying, hey, you know, at 2:15, we're going to be having this presentation. So at about 2:10, you start to try to tip the crowd or whatever time, you know, saying, okay, go have a seat in there. We're going to be talking about such and such.
Yeah.
I'd rather have someone else talk about that. But is that kind of a similar way of you handling it? Or?
I never do straight presentations.
That's
I get
what
calls
I mean.
For that.
Yeah.
And I will usually book someone else just because my role or my act, I feel like I can deliver the best value doing what it is that I do. And the amount of content that I put in a presentation is pretty high.
Yeah.
So usually it's like, you know, that'll all be in my presentation, right? Like, so it's and they're going to remember it more if I do it my way.
Yes.
So I never do that as kind of an upsell. I will do that kind of thing as I'll MC for, they have partner presentations or something in the booth where I'll introduce them and like thank them at the end and help them, you know, facilitate a little draw or whatever we need.
Right.
That something that, you know, just helping out in terms of the show of, you know, because they're pretty helpless, you know, when they try to put together an audience and they don't know how to use a mic. They don't know. There's a lot of skills that we've learned as magicians and just knowing what showmanship is like that we can add value to those booths that want to do a little presentation.
One last question. Do you spend any time prior to the show with sitting down with the client and the salesman of saying, here are the do's and don'ts of booth management?
Yeah, actually, we created a presentation just because I was so frustrated with them not doing their job.
Yep.
That I, you know, so I do sell that on the front end.
Eating and drinking at the booth and they don't care.
Yeah, or whatever, just goofing off or not being there or, you know, just, you know, ignoring people, you know, that need to be acknowledged or engaged. So, yeah, I do that as a part of the thing. And I was, this Exhibitor Live, which is a trade show for trade shows happening starting today. That's why I'm in town or staying in town. Training their booth staff is a big thing. But in my experience, it's the last thing they'll ever spend money on. Right.
Yeah.
It's the thing that could probably move the needle the most.
Yes.
There's an old stat from the Center of Exhibition Industry Research. 85% of your company's success will be because of the people in the booth, your people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're doing their jobs, that's going to move the needle, but
right,
you know, so training them is one of those things, but they don't they much rather spend their money on, you know, other things. And as long as they're spending their money on you, then that's good too.
That's not a bad thing either. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time. And of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. I alluded earlier about someone had said what their phrase was. So what is your philosophy of life? What's your magic word or
phrase? What's my magic word?
I don't mean necessarily a word. What is it you live by? You know, what's your mantra? What's important to you?
You know, you know what, the bringing passion to what I'm doing. That's been kind of the secret for me, I think, mm-hmm. is like, if I'm just kind of, and I had a trade show where it was kind of getting run down.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of like, I just thought about the fact that we're back having in-person events.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it just energized me, and just knowing that,
being thankful. You
know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Being thankful and being able to, do what it is that I love and just share that with people. Right. Like we have,
yeah.
You know, I think as magicians, you know, everyone took for granted that, you know, in-person piece. True. And so just to be able to share what it is that I do again and have that passion for it, that keeps me going forward.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Anders. That's been great.
Thanks.
Enjoy talking,
Scott,
with you. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Anders Boulanger. This is Scotty out.
Thank you very much, Anders. It was great talking with you and catching up. We had recorded that conversation in June of this year, 2022, when I was out in Las Vegas and he was there for a couple of overlapping trade shows and got to spend the weekend together while we went to some shows and did some other things and kind of hung out and had a good chance to catch up and have a good chat. And so this could have gone on a little bit longer, as you can tell. It's a little bit longer than the regular hour that we have. But hopefully this is some information that will be equally helpful and interesting to you as well. So be sure to subscribe to our pod letter so you know who's going to be coming up from week to week. We've got quite a few weeks between now and November before I go on my next tour, I should say, next travels to another convention. I'll be traveling to North Carolina, to Charlotte, where I'll be attending Trix, but that won't be until, again, later, a month or so from now. In the meantime, we have several conversations with other conjurers that we have recorded, and we will then be presenting these over the ensuing weeks. So be sure to, again, sign up for the pod letter. When you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you'll see a little pop-up. Sign up, and please join us, and we'll let you know who's going to be coming up from week to week. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and bring passion to everything that you do. This is Scotty out.